Welcome all once again to Dual World in episode 86. We have a pretty big show for you this week. As far as news goes, it was actually a fairly active week. But before we get started on that, let's introduce our panel of gamers. Joining us this week, we have Martin.
Hello.
And he, yesterday tomorrow, I guess, it will be his birthday. It'll be tomorrow as a recording, but yesterday as when we actually put this up. So let's wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Martin.
Thank you.
How old are you? Are you well old now, or?
28.
Yeah, well old.
Wait, you're still younger than Earl, though, right?
Or? No, I'm younger than him by a couple of months. But
I'm well old.
Fuck you.
We have Daniel being an ass.
Hello.
And we have Jason.
I'm back.
We have a whole shade of news, but actually most of us haven't been playing anything new recently, have we?
Well, I have. I don't know about anyone else.
Oh, I have too, but...
not as much new for the listeners.
I played a bunch of board games.
Yeah, we already had the strategy podcast last week. We bored to death. We're not going to repeat it again. So, what have you been playing, Daniel?
Obviously, because I was begging last time, I was begging Gearbox for DLC. I got my DLC, and I kind of repeal my begging now. What we got was not so great. So, it's not Moxie Part 2. The best way I can compare it is the zombie one from the first game.
I enjoyed the zombie one.
You probably enjoy this one then. It's just like, there's nothing particularly special about it. It's like they say it's 7 to 10 hours, which is a massive overstatement. It will take you 4 to 5 on your first playthrough, and it will take you 2 on a second playthrough. It basically undoes some of the things that they fixed in the second Borderlands 2, which was all of the side quests are fetch quests, which was really annoying. Go here, pick up this, kill these people, come back. It's very buggy. If by some miracle somebody at Gearbox or Randy Pitchford is listening to this, right, please stop outsourcing your DLC, because it is obvious. I mean, the final boss was broken the first time I played it. No matter how much I shot it, I could not kill it. I couldn't even do any damage to it. So I had to reload the game, and then it worked. The final boss doesn't even have any music to it. So it's really awkward to be fighting it, and then it just kind of dies, and like there's nothing spectacular about it, and then the credits roll, and I'm like, okay. Like the environments are like, you'll be running across the environment, and all of a sudden you'll get stuck on nothing, and then it will work again. It's like, what the hell is going on? I mean, the dialogue's okay, it's well acted, it's not really funny, but you know, it's all right, it's bearable. And otherwise, it's just fetch quests.
It kind of sounds like they rushed this thing out instead of taking the time with the DLC like they did with the first game.
He mentioned the first one was the zombie one, which was... the zombie one was just a cool addition. It didn't really do anything to the game. You didn't get XP for it.
This one is... it adds a,
well,
it
at, adds... least, at least I didn't hear any complaints about it being buggy.
The Borderlands 2 DLC adds a sand skiff, which is fun for a bit until you realise, like, the best thing about it is, like, they kind of rushed sort of developing it, they made it so it hovers over every surface. So you can get it to hover over invisible walls, so it can be upright against an invisible wall, which is kind of funny the first time you do it. It's a bit rushed. It was outsourced because Triptych Games made it, which is a bunch of people from 3D Realms. And I think they're just doing that because... you have people that don't understand the game working on the game, which is why there was nothing but fetch quests. I wasn't particularly...
I feel like that's a case of you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I mean, one of the things, you know, we've mentioned this time and time again when talking about DLC, is that you kind of want it in a timely manner, because it's been about a month since Borderlands 2 came out, and if you push it further back, you're just going to hit the onset of the fall season. Okay. And that if you get out of that window, like, the first quarter of next year, is it that much better? So people are going to be like, you know what, I sold Borderlands, I know I'm going to play Borderlands, this and that. And if they had taken the time to actually build DLC while making the game, people would have complained that this should have been content in the game and not something that you save for DLC or something like that.
Yeah, it just irritates me, like, because it's obvious that they just don't get the game. And the best DLC that was made for Borderlands 1 was not outsourced. And I saw somebody complain to Randy Pitchford, because I have his Twitter feed open all the time, because he keeps tweeting out codes for golden keys, and I want them golden keys, because the chest keeps screwing me over. Anyway, and he was talking about, somebody complained to him that they outsourced the DLC, and his excuse was, well, that's how Gearbox started, but Gearbox didn't make small amounts of content that were to come out a month after the game released. They released basically another Half-Life game. So, I know, I don't think that's a, like, and not to mention this, Gearbox had the time, they had the money, because obviously Valve, you know, they could have got it right, well, easy, whereas, I know, I don't think this is, it's gonna knock the case with, like, DLCs that are supposed to come out a month after the game.
Yeah, like I said, it's a tough gig, but hopefully they get it right with the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I have the season pass. I can't really complain, because I did get the season pass at a price it shouldn't have been. So,
well, I was going to say, and I think, and this is kind of going back, you have a right to complain if you pay for anything, no matter what discount you get.
Yeah, I can't say that it was a waste of money, because it obviously isn't. I mean, I only paid £2 for this, if you do the math, and it was well worth £2.
Okay. Jason has been playing Fall for Cybertron. I know we talked about it before, but do you want to give us your brief impressions?
Yeah, I won't go too much into it, but overall, I was really impressed. I also played War for Cybertron, which was also by High Moon Studios, and while I felt War for Cybertron
game,
what's that?
Don't play the Dark of the Moon game they released in between, because it sucks.
Yeah, I did it. I tried to stay away from those movie license cash-ins, but War for Cybertron I thought was pretty solid back in the day, but I had certain issues with it.
Wasn't as polished.
Yeah, it wasn't as polished. It was really repetitive. The art style, while trying to capture the kind of whole robot aesthetic, I thought was really, over the course of the game, got really boring and stuff. And I think Fall of Cybertron rectifies every single little minor problem I had with War for Cybertron, with the exception of, I still don't think you fight enough, or any really, Transformers that you actually know. For the most part, your enemies are just, you know, run-of-the-mill foot soldiers. But it didn't bother me as much, because the rest of the game is just fantastic. I mean, it's really well written.
I love the humor.
The humor is great. Especially, I forget. The other guy.
My favorite bit was, you know, when you play a Starscream before, you start off as a random Decepticon goon, and you're with there's two guys, you're with somebody, and they're talking about how Starscream is so stupid, and then Starscream's in the background going, oh, do tell, and then they start quaking, and you know, in like Scooby-Doo, when their knees sort of clack together, that sound that it makes, it does that in the game, and I was like, oh my god, that's great, I love it.
Oh, it was, yeah, and it's little things like that, where, you know, and it's, they kind of, in War for Cybertron, they kind of split up the campaign where there was a Decepticon one and an Autobot one, and they kind of, they were part of the same story, it wasn't like two versions, but they were distinct campaigns. In Fall of Cybertron, it's much more organic, where there's one story, and depending on the mission, you play as a Decepticon or Autobot, and even in the last mission, you actually play as both over the course of the final battle. But I think it was a brilliant move. It adds, it makes the pacing a lot easier to manage, and the level by level design in particular, they do a lot of stuff to really mix it up. Like, you know, I keep forgetting his name, but the guy that's with Jazz, he has like a grappling hook. Cliff Jumper, there you go. He has a grappling hook. Oh no, Jazz has the grappling hook.
And Cliff Jumper.
Jazz has a grappling hook, which you like obviously change can add some things to the level design. Cliff Jumper has a cloaking ability. Optimus early on can control this giant behemoth transformer called Metroplex. Like, so every level by level, like, they completely mix everything up. And I don't know, man. It was like everything is. It's the Transformers game you always wanted as the little kid, like watching those cartoons and stuff. Like,
but not watching the Michael Bay movies.
Yeah.
The only problem I had with Fall of Cybertron is the final boss is bullshit.
That was the other thing I was gonna mention is the final fight is kinda there's a lot to be left on the table there. I mean They kind of go into mechanics that you haven't used before, and it's just, you can't really lose, I feel like, and I don't know, it could have been better.
There's a really cool setup, and without spoiling it too much, you're left kind of going, what, at the end? Yeah. Like, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? And it could have been so much more interesting, but the final boss fight is just so unfair.
Yep.
And there's no reason for it.
Yep. You put it pretty well. Like, that's exactly how I was feeling.
It's the ultimate Transformers final boss fight, and they ruined it.
Yeah, it's... Especially since going back to what I was saying, how you don't really fight Transformers you know.
Yeah,
but that
the
is
one
the one
time
moment
you get to do it.
Yeah, and they kind of, they botched it. I mean... Overall, it didn't really affect, you know, like, I loved the game. Like, the campaign was just phenomenal. Like anyone who's a fan of Transformers, like, you need to go at least rent this game, play through the campaign. Like, it's just, it's very well designed, you know, like I said, well written, like, gorgeous, like, anything you could want in a Transformers game. And it's got a pretty solid multiplayer. I mean, nothing... like crazy innovative or special, you know, it's Transformers with kind of a Call of Duty skin, but it's fun, but nothing to take home to the
bed. It's
Call of Duty, just instead of calling in the jets to rain rockets on people, you become the jet.
Yeah.
I still want to check this out, maybe near the end of the year when I'm playing catch up. I was also going to say, I think part of the thing with not fighting recognizable Transformers is probably be just them dealing with the license, because we see this with a lot of licensed games, especially when they are around like movie franchises where they don't want to use characters that they might introduce later on.
Right, I mean, there's ways to do fights without necessarily, like, you know, killing.
You're saying that there's plenty of named Transformers. There's loads of them.
Yeah, they're all in the game, like, they all play roles in the story and the plot, and they're in a lot of cases they're in the level, you know, like talking trash or whatever in the case of Decepticons, but they're not, you don't directly confront them until the end when they kind of, you know, you don't, it's kind of a fight, but it's like this whole, like, almost like QTE, like, I don't know.
And like, I was quite, like, this is a minor thing, but I was kind of confused that you see Bumblebee in the first level and then you never see him again.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too. I mean, yeah.
What can you do? And I guess for me, I play a licensed game as well. I picked up 007 Legends because, let's be honest, I was going to anyhow. I mean, honestly, that's the gist of it. I was going to buy the game anyhow. And I got I actually got a review copy for the PS3, and it's, like, when I see a game getting, like, 4 or 5, I assume it's a broken mess. I think this game works, it's a functional shooter. I think the problem is it's a very generic shooter. Like, you could probably call this Call of Duty James Bond Edition, and it wouldn't be any different.
Oh, you mean, like, 007 GoldenEye Reloaded, or whatever?
But no, GoldenEye Reloaded, I think, was a much better game because it was, and this game has stealth segments as well, but I felt like GoldenEye gave you a lot more to work with as far as being, going through the game as a stealth agent or going through the game as a pure shooter, and it did stuff smartly. With this, it's kind of like you're forced to do certain segments in stealth. If you get busted, you have to start over, and the game's not
rooted.
I hate
that
it too. And the game's not really designed around it because there's no way for you to know what the enemies are doing. Like, you have a watch that gives you, like, the standard positions of the enemies, but it doesn't tell you if they're facing you, with their cone of vision or anything like that. And there's no way to, like, even if you're in cover, which isn't really a cover system, crouch behind stuff.
I was watching the Giant Bomb Quick Look when they got to the sort of the bit where it kind of introduced the stealth sections, and I kind of thought... Yeah. Like, if you're going to do that, why does this game have to be a first-person shooter? Like, if you were to take Uncharted and put a James Bond skin on it, that would be cool.
You mean, like, everything or nothing?
I was going to say that, too.
if you take Everything or Nothing and make a proper sequel to it, and not Bloodstone, I've said this before, Everything or Nothing is still my personal favorite James Bond game. Because of that reason, the whole point is... And I GoldenEye. I'm sure a lot of people love GoldenEye, and that's the problem. It's GoldenEye, and they said this in the Quick Hit, GoldenEye ruined the James Bond franchise.
Yeah.
James Bond isn't a shooter. I mean, even if you watch some of his best movies, tend to be the ones where it's not action, 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 action.
Or even when there is action, it's not necessarily him shooting people.
Yeah.
I didn't know about Everything or Nothing, but, you know, Uncharted can do stealth okay. You know, you've got your platforming, you've got your shooting if you need to do it, you know, you've got your high-octane action set pieces. That's like the perfect formula for a James Bond game.
Yeah, so is everything on... But yeah, I think the thing is, and it's not necessary... I don't even think James Bond needs to be stealthy or not. I mean, he's a spy, which does kind of... You know, like, he's more of a... It's more of an Assassin's Creed thing. You blend into the environment, you kind of pick up information. Not necessarily, like, he hides in the shadows.
Well,
sneaks
not
up
to mention, like, all the bad guys always know who he is.
Well, I mean, when you go around introducing yourself to everyone, it's really hard to keep a secret identity.
Yeah.
I think Everything or Nothing does this, and I think GoldenEye, and I think 007 Legends does this decently as well, is they do start to incorporate some of that spy aspect. Everything or Nothing was a bit better in that regard because you had control over, like, your gadgets and stuff like that. Here, it's more like you have this all-purpose cell phone, a Sony Xperia, in case you wanted to know, because it shows up every time you use it. And the phone has, it's a camera.
Xperia Play? Does he play some PS Mobile games?
No, he doesn't. Sadly enough. But, yeah, you have... it's a camera. It's a biometric sensor. And that's kind of used like detective mode in the Arkham games. But you don't have to use it for any batteries. It's just kind of... You find fingerprints. You can detect, like, odors and fire paths. You can find, like, hidden things in rooms if you can find somebody's fingerprints on other objects and stuff like that. And then it has an electromagnetic setting, which is more for hacking doors, hacking computers, picking locks and stuff like that. Again, it's kind of one of those things where I just feel it's cheap to have an all-purpose phone, but I do like that they're incorporating aspects of him being a spy into the franchise. But I think the biggest problem here, and this is why GoldenEye works so well, is that GoldenEye focused on a single movie, and they can kind of expand out on this. This one focuses on 5 movies, and I'm halfway through the final one so far. Skyfall DLC comes out right after the movie. And what happens?
Super dumb.
Yeah, I honestly get what they're trying to do, but part of me just wants to say, why not just hold out the game until the movie comes out?
Yep.
Because what happens, from what I heard in reviews, and I guess I'm about to find out, there's no ending to this game.
Because that's always a great idea. Is this Skyfall DLC free at least?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's free. But again, it's
only on 360 and PS3, right? Not what other platforms is this for?
It comes out on the Wii U in December and PC as a download. PC's November 2nd.
I can't wait to see how bad that port is then.
But no Skyfall DLC for either of those SKUs, am I right?
Not on the info sheet. And that's the other thing, it's like, you even get boned if you... Because it comes out on the 9th for PS3 owners, which means you get it the day Skyfall comes out, and then it comes out the 20th on the 360. So yeah, but yeah, what happens is that Gaiadides, one, it butchers a lot of the stories of these movies and key scenes because they get people who, they get the licenses for people's face shoes, but they don't get their voice actors either. You know, they're deceased, so they didn't get it. So like, they have that scene from Goldfinger where he's like, do you expect me to talk? And he's like, no. And it just comes off so fat and embarrassing. I'm like, just don't put it in here if you can't do it right. And the strangest thing to me is for some reason, Jinx, who's played by Halle Berry in Die Another Day, turns out to be white in this game. So, I understand that Halle Berry is probably expensive, but why make her white and not just another, like a generic African-American?
Well, movie? To be fair, the real question is, why even include Die Another Day?
And I said this when it was announced, and I said, I think Die Another Day would make a fantastic Bond game, and honestly, as of right now, it was my favorite mission in the game, because it combines a lot of things that makes Bond work, and it's the type of stuff that carries over to a video game well.
Wait, so are there, it's one mission per movie?
Yeah, it's one mission per movie, kind of. Most of them are broken up into like two parts. You have, usually it's just part of the mission, then something happens, you get like an endpoint, and it's like, oh, this is what you did in the mission. And then there's a second part, which is usually more dealing with the main villain of the movie, and that's, each mission's about an hour, give or take, so it's going to be a fairly short game. I mean, breaking down into specifics, the gunplay is solid, it's a shooter, it's based on the Call of Duty engine, I assume, at this point, so you know what to expect. Stealth is really just buggy because, like, people find you for the most odd reasons. And it's really stupid that they have stealth and they introduce elements to counteract that. But, like, you get your tranquilizer darts in, like, the third mission. The game's already halfway over by that point. The parts that really piss me off are they have hand-to-hand combat sections, which, again, is kind of cool because Bond is a fighter and that's not something you often get to see in first person. But these don't have any type of skill involved whatsoever. Like, basically, you face a random person and they usually, they'll block parts of their body and you have to hit the parts they aren't blocking. But the game tells you exactly what part to hit. So there's no strategy. It's like a really mundane quick time event. And this happens, the final boss in every chapter is this. And at this point, it's just really tedious and boring. I don't know. If you're not going to do something well, don't do it at all. I would have rather a random shootout.
Yeah, it sounds like even Uncharted 3's hand-to-hand combat system would have been better.
Yeah, I like Uncharted's hand-to-hand combat for the most part, but yeah, this is just like, it's like they wanted to do something and they didn't know how to emphasize it, so they're just like, we'll put this in, and it's kind of like repeats. I've done it like 10 times now, and not like the only new thing they add is like sometimes the person will grab a weapon, and you have to block it with their hands, and then you have to tap really fast and knock it out, and then it goes into the same routine over and over again. Or make it, you know, if you've done it, they could have done something like Punch Out, where there's like a pattern you have to duck and dodge and stuff like that. But yeah, other than it's tedious and boring.
Seriously, and Activision, 007 Uncharted, do it.
Yeah, and I don't get the purpose of this game, because I get that it's a Skyfall. It's a Skyfall tie-in, I guess, because, you know, it has, but Skyfall isn't included in the mission, in the game yet. It doesn't have Skyfall in the title.
It has Skyfall and, intro.
No, it has the intro. Oh, you mean the actual, okay.
Actual beginning.
Yeah, the actual beginning. Which, again, you could have done that next year.
Yeah.
And you could have included Skyfall mission. Yeah, it's like, it didn't have to be out this year. There was no sense in, like, it feels like a rushed product. It feels like something that they could have sat down and could have made a much more interesting game out of. Because there are moments of brilliance, I think, in here. There's certain, like I said, the Die Another Day chapter was fantastic for me. Because it combined, you know, like, part of it, at the start of the mission, you're going through the ice dome. And you're taking pictures of terrorists and stuff like that. No combat, just kind of finding people, taking pictures of them and sending it to MI6. You go around, you know, you get hints as to what he's up to. You know, you get caught and stuff like that, and then there's an awesome car chase scene, and that's kind of cool, especially being that it's on the ice, and you have to get used to that. And then you kind of, and there's like a plane chase at the end when you try to get a modded plane, and like, they're throwing stuff at you, and then you got there's an escape sequence at the end. All of that is kind of cool, but it feels like it would have been much better if it was in a bigger package and not something that was introduced for you to do for like 5 minutes and then never seen again in the game. So, I mean, I am, like I said, I'm close to being done. I'm halfway through the final mission, which is Moonraker. You can expect the review sometime soon. I assume it's not going to get a perfect score, but it's. I think if for a weekend rent too, if you have like time to kill and there's nothing out, like, yeah, rent it. It's inoffensive. It's not broken. It works.
Yeah, because there's nothing out this time of the year.
Oh, I didn't say this time of year. I said if you had nothing to pay. I guess say next summer you're bored and you have an itch for Bond and Skyfall just came out on Blu-ray. You can pick this up or something. Or you can pick up the Superior Gold and I really owed it or whatever. So that's 007 Legends. I think now we can switch to news, and there was a lot of news to be had this week. We'll start off with Anarchy Reigns, which has got a release date and a price. And finally, somebody understands the value of their product. Anarchy Reigns is coming out January 8th for $30.
Or 20 quid if you're in the UK, which is... if I had an Xbox, I would pick that shit up. A platinum game for 20 quid? Yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I understand, it's a fun game. It's just, it doesn't have much substance to it, but it's a
it's
fun
got platinum game. Written on it. You don't need to need any other convincing.
I like platinum, but I don't see the appeal of the game, and I don't even think even at this price point it will sell anything.
It's probably not, but I think it probably would have done better than if it was 60.
Oh, it definitely.
That's probably true.
So, I mean, like I said, it's nice that somebody's recognizing that probably this would not have sold at 60, so 30. And I think people are like, you know, for 30, I'll give it a look, I'll check it out or something like that. Because it's free at that point where it's not, you know, it's kind of an impulse buy at that point, I think. You see it in the store, you haven't had anything else to say yet. $30, and it's right before the big Q1 rush. Because I don't think anything's out in early January, end of December. So they kind of have that as well. And that's kind of their week. Because Bayonetta came out January 10th as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I honestly don't know what I think about it. But it's a good price. I don't know if I'll be picking it up.
I would buy it if I still had a console. Definitely.
Yeah. I really don't care about this game. I don't see the appeal at all.
Well, I think it's kind of like... I've always seen, it's like a Smash Brothers type game for characters you don't know.
I get
know.
To play as Bayonetta and beat the shit out of my friends.
There you go.
All right.
Microsoft has announced that they have sold 70 million Xbox 360s, which
that's a lot.
Kudos to them.
That's a lot.
As much as I tend to give credit to Nintendo for the turnaround they did this generation, Microsoft has to be commended for what they did this generation as well. I mean, they've almost tripled what the original Xbox sold in a single generation. They are considered the market leader. They have tremendous third-party support. It's been a terrific turnaround for them. I mean, it sucks for Sony because it came at their expense, but there you go.
And they're just under half the PS2 sold. So good luck with that, Microsoft.
Well, I don't think they're going to... I think sales of the 360 are going to slow down. I think as much as Microsoft has done like I said, a tremendous job, I don't think Microsoft has quite the library that the PS2 had. Nor does it have what Nintendo considers evergreen titles. I don't... Like, you have
and it has stronger competition from the other two consoles.
Yeah.
And other, you know, other market things like the iPhones and everything.
So. Yeah, and I think especially if the next Xbox... or the next PlayStation 4 is backwards compatible, it's going to be a harder sell to say, I'll pick this up because I want to play this and that when I can just buy the next system and buy those games that I missed out on. Because, I mean, like, the PS3, it had PS2 backwards compatibility, but that was only for, like, a year. So, what else? Nintendo announced that characters and items from their franchises will be included in Scribblenauts Unlimited, including folks from the Mario and Zelda universe.
I saw a tweet saying, does this mean I can make a zombie Mario, which will be interesting.
No.
No.
It's a shame.
It's well, one, Nintendo has, I think,
I don't even think you can use adjectives on any of Nintendo's.
No, you can't use adjectives.
Oh, can you not?
You can't use adjectives on Nintendo's franchises, which makes sense. Nintendo's very particular about their IPs and protecting them.
I get that, but, like, I don't understand how, like, there's not anything that's bad that's going to come of it, like...
Well, you say that, and they're probably thinking, like, Nintendo's a very conservative company, as we'll get to in just a second, in that
regard.
But
Scribblenauts is a very...
It's a very
light-hearted game. It's kid-friendly. So, like, if a kid wants to see a zombie Mario, you just make it humorous and...
Yeah, but I think the problem is that they just think that, you know, like, no matter what you plan on, there's going to be somebody who breaks it in. It's like, they want to kind of retain their reputation as like that kid-friendly, family-friendly company. Which doesn't always work, but, you know, and it's kind of nice. I don't know if it's necessarily nice, but it's okay that they're going back to this mentality. They had this with the GameCube, where they would own out their characters on IPs to third-party games so that people would kind of gain interest in them. We've seen it with Scribblenauts, and they've done it with Tekken, which I think also looks fantastic in its uses of the Nintendo licenses and stuff like that.
But that's all, like, Tekken is doing it in a very humorous way, because the Tekken characters with the Nintendo costumes look really stupid, and, like, stupid in a good way. You know, and I just think that, you know, like, if you're a bit lenient like that, then I don't understand why you can't stretch it, especially like a very creative game like Scribblenauts.
I assume this is the same thing that happened with Tekken. Like, Tekken is just literally their costumes. There's like nothing else to it. So I assume it's like you make it exactly how we have it.
Yeah, but you're putting guys in Princess Peach's dresses.
It's still Princess Peach's dress. And I guess in their heads, it's like, it's not Princess Peach.
Yeah, exactly. Also, what I just want to know is if any of the Nintendo characters will be able to defeat Cthulhu.
I assume they will, because they'll have Ungaji powers. I'm kind of curious. I have a bet on Twitter right now as to what will happen first. Link right in Epona or Mario right in... I mean, Link riding Yoshi or Mario riding Epona. Because, you know, that's going to be like one of the first things people do.
It would probably be Link riding Yoshi, because that's what looks silly.
I don't know. Mario and a horse looks kind of silly, too.
Not as much as Link, which is, as Nintendo franchises go, like the more sort of realistic kind of character riding a blue dinosaur that eats eggs.
Green dinosaur.
Green. I can't color today.
So, yeah, there's that. Now, the other thing that came out this week is Nintendo, the Wii U's somewhat details on how the chat system works-ish. From what I understand from Kotaku and IGN is that it's not a system-wide feature, which I think is a terrible mistake to begin with.
Yep.
I honestly don't know what's going on with that system at this, because they have a gig saved for all this other stuff, but right now it's not being used for anything as far as we know. So,
do you know what the last system was that had to have the messages built into the games and not the system? The original Xbox.
Well, I think that the messaging is different. I think this is like voice chat.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
like
still silly though.
It's completely silly. I think it's still backwards, especially being that people still embarrass the PS3 for not having this feature. You're going to make a next-gen system and still not do this. The other thing that came out is the fact that you can't use the mic that's built into the gamepad for voice chat.
What?
Yep.
That's retarded.
Yeah, that's kind of... And the funny thing is, I thought this is what people were going to take offense to, but it's actually not what people took offense to. They did, but it's the stuff that comes just a bit later on.
You have to buy a separate microphone, don't you?
The buying a separate microphone, I don't think, again, is a deal break. I mean, I bought a separate microphone for my 360, and that came with one, just because I think that wireless one has a better sound quality. But, yeah, I just think the idea of not... Like, there's a mic on the system, why not use that for voice chat? It saves people trouble, and it would save a lot of headaches for the next thing, which is the gamepad, the Pro Controller, doesn't have a headphone jack. So in order to use voice in that, you have to plug in a headphone into the Wii gamepad and then use and find some way to attach that while using the game, the controller. And this is what people took offense
Nintendo,
to.
Nintendo, just look at what other people have done and copy it. It's not hard.
I mean, they are copying what people have done. The problem is they aren't supporting it all across the board. I'm in the same boat that I am with the Classic Controller Pro, in that I don't really get the idea. The Pro Controller, I assume, exists to appease third parties.
I mean, so, I don't even get the Pro Controller personally. I'm not buying one at launch. I don't need it.
I won't ever.
The gamepad is the same thing, just with the screen in the middle.
Well, there's some people who don't. There's some people who, like, they're used to the 360 controller, they're used to the PS3 controller, so they want that controller. And this is what I said, Nintendo made it to appease those people, to appease Activision, to appease EA, because they can make their games and people can kind of transition because they're used to it that way. I get that. It's the same thing with the Circle Pad Pro on the 3DS. Nintendo, as far as I know, Nintendo isn't supporting it. None of their games have support for the device.
Kid Icarus?
What? Kid Icarus.
I'm talking about the Pro Controller on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Because even the Nintendo and New Super Mario Bros. U, Pikmin 3 all use the Wiimotes as the secondary controller for their games. I don't think you can use the Pro Controller for any of those titles.
And
so
I wouldn't expect Nintendo to do that anytime soon.
No, I don't. And this is why...
There's not a Zelda game on it yet.
They're not going to use the Pro Controller for Zelda either.
It's going to be the gamepad, because they're going to put some unique functionality on the screen.
Yeah, and I think this is Nintendo going back to the sense that the gamepad is our main controller, and the main controller allows you to plug in a headset and play like a normal, like the 360 controller does.
Yeah.
There's some various workarounds as well.
I just don't understand why they can't just have a headset plug in the Pro Controller also. Especially if you're going to be pushing titles like Call of Duty, like, you know, ports, that is a key part of those experiences.
See, and this is what I mean by the Pro Controller. I mean, there's nothing radically different about using the Wii gamepad, aside from the size, than it is using the 360 controller. It's the same thing without a screen.
Right, but if you're just want to play Call of Duty or whatever, and you don't want to have to deal with that size and presumably the weight that goes with that too.
It's supposed to be really light.
Why they have the Pro Controller in the first place. Like, yeah, it's not a big difference, but what if you do want just that?
Well, and that's
you can't
what I'm saying.
Plug in
it's
a headset, like, come on.
I get that argument. I understand it, but from their point of view, it's like they're trying to encourage people to use this gamepad, and they want to make sure it's always because you can. Like, they don't want you to say, okay, I have this Classic Controller Pro. I'm going to put this aside.
But that's the wrong way to do it. Like, people should want to use the gamepad because the gamepad offers more to the experience, not because the alternate control scheme that they would actually prefer has less functionality.
I agree with that one.
I agree with that, but you're going to have people, no matter what, who are going to want this controller, no matter what happens with the gamepad. And
but
I don't
if using
think
that controller means you can't even
Nintendo
chat.
Nintendo is not going to lose anything by just giving people the choice.
Oh, they're not going to lose anything. I don't think so. I mean, this is what I find funny, and I agree with you. I find it funny that people are drawing the line at them nickel and diming them to have a headset with this controller, and not the fact that you have to buy this controller.
Yeah, I'm more offended that I have to buy a headset just to voice chat, and I'm even more offended that voice chat is not a standard feature for every online game.
Yeah, those are the two things that bothered me. It's like, at some point, I don't know why this isn't standard across the board. Like I said, they have a gig of memory set aside for OS-level features, and I think voice chat, especially after getting used to it on the 360, should be something that's
there's
standard.
There's no way if they've got a gig of RAM dedicated to the OS, right? There's no way that the OS is going to use that. So they've got plenty of space in there. I mean, Windows XP uses, half of a gig?
Well, a lot of it's going to be taken up by streaming stuff to the controller.
Well, I see, even then, I don't think so, because I feel like most of that's built into the games and the system itself. which is why you have games that are kind of like a, not a quantum
leap.
Well,
yeah, when you say the system itself, though, like, that's what it's using, whereas the other gig is for actually running the game.
No, but well, that's what I meant. It's like most of it doesn't seem to be. That's part of the reason I assume most of it doesn't seem to be a quantum leap over this gen is because you're rendering two different things on a screen and a tablet. If it's used in that way, most of the games I've played so far don't really do it in that regard. But yeah. Either way, I think, and I also know that this is Nintendo, and sometimes their messaging to the press is great stuff. So I do want to see what they say when they officially announce this stuff. But right now, it seems really backwards, or he's not forward-thinking enough. So we
but
shall
that's
see.
Kind of Nintendo's MO, so...
Yeah, and I was, you know, this is
which
why
isn't
I
an excuse, but it's not unexpected not, that we're running into something like this.
I'm not saying this, their online has always been iffy, which is why it's one of the things that's been holding me up on getting excited about this. I don't really care if it's not great, but I want to know what I'm getting into bed with first. And this is one of those things where it's just, eh. On the bright side, I mean, you know, you don't really need to buy a new headset. I can just use the one I already use for podcasts and stuff like that, since it works with any old headset. But it's still backwards that the mic isn't a standard feature since it's on the damn controller.
I completely agree with that, 100%.
I mean, Nintendo even allows using the mic off of 3DS. I don't need an extra headset on my 3DS voice chat. So why not on the Wii U? I don't understand.
I assume. No, you see, the 3DS, the DS, and the 3DS are great examples. I was going to say, the only thing I can think of is probably they couldn't find a way to reduce the noise level because it would be like you would hear somebody kicking the controller all the times. But I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I mean, of course, a headset is always a better solution, but why not at least give the option?
Well, I think, and again, some of this has been iffy because everybody has been, you know, everybody's kind of getting a piece of the pitch. It seems like the mic stuff is not a system-wide thing, but it is a software-level thing. So if you wanted to use the mic in that regard, it's the same thing with wireless, depending on how the sound is set.
Like the developer could choose to enable the use of the mic.
But I think, you know, like if it's not something that Nintendo's like, here's an on and off switch, I think most people are just going to ignore it because it's too much of a hassle to program yourself, and they shouldn't have to. It's something that's in the controller. The controller is your big push for the system. You should make sure that everything's kind of good to go for launch. Yeah, going back to Microsoft real quick, this week we saw the rollout of a new dashboard. I think most people had the beta for this or whatever. Who has the new dashboard?
I do.
Okay, you want to tell us about it?
There's not that much to tell. It's a more refined version of the Metro dashboard we've had for a year now, right? For the most, it's one of the better dashboards we've had on 360 so far. It's still not like perfect, but just some of the changes, like it uses more of the screen real estate. Like there's more of those little boxes showing you, you know, what apps you have or what's available in the marketplace now, or you know, with all these streaming apps, like what sporting events are on, the presidential debates on, like. All you know, all the things you can do on Xbox Live. There's more space for all that now, and there's a whole section of they call it My Pins, which borrows from Windows Phone or Windows 8, where you can pin games or apps or, you know, whatever you want.
Does that mean that I can actually remove all the non-game shit if I want?
No,
to?
Well, see, that's the problem with the My Pins. Is it's not like on Windows Phone. If you pin something to your home screen, right? The little app thing goes on to your home screen. On 360, if you pin something, it doesn't go to your home screen. It goes to the My Pins section. You still have to click on the My Pins section, and then you see all your pins. And it's not even neatly laid out like the rest of the dashboard. It's a list. You know, like if you go into Quick Play and there's a list like horizontally you can scroll through, it's like that. So it's not it's nice that with all these options, it makes it easier to for like apps that you use the most or something. You can put them there and it makes it a little easier. But it's still not ideal, you know. Let's see, what else
question,
have they done?
Did they improve the placement of your games tab? Or is that still really well hidden?
Yes, they did do that. So what they did is they combined the TV and movies tabs, and they moved it after the games. So now you start on home, you go the first tab over social, and then games.
Oh, thank God for that.
Wait.
So it's still home, social, and then games.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
It's an improvement.
That's why I'm saying because the first thing I do when I turn on my console is see which my friends are online.
Yeah.
It's like that's fine for me. And you're still on, you mean on your homepage, you still have the first thing, your default icon is to play whatever disc is in there, and there's a box, you know, it's called recent now, it used to be quick play of like the 10 most recent things you launched, apps and games. So it worked. It's definitely better than the, you know,
being
social and then TV and then video and then games, which I felt like they did just so they could say, oh, look, it says video games, but it was so inconvenient. They also, let's see, they cleaned up the marketplace a little bit. It still resembles a lot like it was before, but there's a new, like, there's a coming soon section and now in stores section, and it's just laid out a little bit better. It's just going back to what I said about it's using more of the real estate of the screen, which I always felt like the last version of the dashboard was just wasting a lot of space. And I mean, what else is new? The Xbox video and music looks just like Zune. And interestingly, I was looking at it yesterday. The Xbox video and Xbox music don't use the extra screen real estate like the rest of the new dashboard. Like, it's still kind of confined to the middle portion like the old dashboard was, which is weird. But
strange.
Yeah, other than that, there's also, actually, it's kind of cool, in the games and TV/movies tabs, there's a right section that lists recommendations. So there's two boxes right now. On games, it's recommending me Full House Poker because it's on sale, and Double Dragon Neon. And then there's another box where it says view all recommendations, so then there's some more. So it's kind of tying in. They've had this in the marketplace for a couple iterations of the dashboard now, where it'll recommend titles to you, which is kind of cool. Besides that, they added some more apps. They did add Internet Explorer, which was surprisingly nice to use. I mean, I don't know how much.
Were you the one who said it's the best version of Internet Explorer?
I think it might be, because, which isn't saying that much, because Internet Explorer is shit on everything.
I was actually going to say, how much do you use Internet Explorer to actually compare it?
Well, on my phone, I have to use it because I have a Windows phone.
Why? Oh,
and
they don't allow you to third party.
There's no good one. I don't. There's like only like Chinese ones that I don't even understand. So that's a whole other discussion that has nothing to do with video games, but. It's surprisingly easy to use with controller, other than obviously typing.
Have you used Steam's Big Picture browser?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how to.
If you had, how does it compare? But if you haven't, then I can't ask you because.
Yeah,
I
couldn't say. So I don't know.
Does it act like the PS3's one, where you have to move the cursor around with the controller, or?
Yeah, but it's much, much smoother than the PS3 one, and there's different options for how the view can either snap to the TV or you can have it.
That's interesting because the browser built into Big Picture is the opposite. So instead of moving the cursor around the page, you move the page around the cursor.
Oh, so you there's both of those options.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you
But it's text input still with a crappy on-screen QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, that's just a limitation of, you know, okay. You don't. Oh, I guess in the Big Picture they have the
wheel.
The
cool flower.
There's nothing
thing.
Cool like that. I will. There's no smart glass support yet, which I feel like will make browsing more practical than with a controller.
Well, it kind of won't, because you have to use something that's got a browser on it to connect to something else that has a browser on it to use a browser, but...
Well, but at least, well, I guess if you want it for, if you wanted to browse on your TV...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that I'm going to use this a lot or as my primary browser, but if for what, you know, I don't, it's kind of a cool perk, and it's, I mean, browsers on TVs have always been subpar, and I was just kind of impressed that it works. Usable, you know, it works.
Yeah.
It's solid.
It's worth noting to anybody listening that you have to be an Xbox Live Gold subscriber to use Internet Explorer.
You have to pay for Internet Explorer.
You have to pay for Internet Explorer.
That's the first.
It's added value.
It's actually not added value, because you end up using Twitter and Facebook apps. Because we all know that we all check Twitter and Facebook on our Xbox.
All the time.
Yeah. Because I had both of those apps, and I used them the first week they came out and never touched them again.
I mean, I think we all it's the same thing I did with Home. I downloaded it, I tried it once, and that was it.
Yeah. They say the reason for that is they want to direct you to just using IE. Which is fine, because it's actually, I mean, you're using the actual websites then, which are much more robust than either of those apps were. And you can, we were talking about the pinning earlier, you can pin web pages to the pin section.
Cool.
And there's also a separate, you know, pin, like bookmark section within Internet Explorer as well. So,
Or I could use my computer, my tablet, or my phone.
There's a very
all
limited...
All those other options that are way better.
Yes. And all you know is that pretty much share the same internet connection, so if you have a working Xbox and no working computer, your priorities are screwed up. So, yes.
This is a pretty minor overhaul of the dashboard. It's more... a couple tweaks they did, but it is an improvement.
Should have fixed a long time ago, but have only just gotten around to doing it.
Yeah, it's a minor improvement, but it's not back to where it was before when they used the V8s. Not the original V8s, but the second set of V8s that they came up with.
It's very much still the Metro dashboard. Like you're not gonna suddenly have a whole new experience. You're not going to suddenly, you know, there's still the advertisement box in the little corner. They might have made it a little smaller, or it just seems smaller because there's more stuff you can view. But I mean, it's just tweaking.
As I was to say, I'm not a huge fan of the Metro dashboard, the Metro looking, even on Windows 8, which I have. Not a huge fan of it.
Not at all.
So, yeah, it's not that great to have on my system either. But the Xbox actually wasn't the only thing that got a new face this week. Sony updated the PlayStation Store after, like, 6 years of people complaining that it was bunk, which it was.
Well, this is the second update.
Is it?
They overhauled once before. It used to look
It was worse before this?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it used to be much worse.
Well, I'm going to say this. What you have a new PlayStation Store... Unless you're in the UK, in which case you don't have it because they.
I thought it was also delayed here, but I.
Yeah, it was delayed in North America too. And it's funny, one of my friends brought this up. The new store looks a lot like the Metro dashboard.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of going in that direction where. I mean, they're all kind of going for that app feel because the giant logos and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I kind of like it. I think, you know, it very easily lets you see a lot of
the problem with it is it looks nice, but it looks even less like the XMB than PlayStation Store used to.
Which is kind of weird, because they stuck with the XMB kind of for the Vita. They have other features, but I don't know why they don't get rid of that. But
there's no XMB on the Vita.
I thought there was.
No, there's like an app-style home screen also.
Yeah. Okay. But I think only one of us has the PlayStation 3 updated store, and that's Martin, right?
Looks like it. I already have it, and already said, it looks really nice, but that's actually not my main complaint that I had with the PlayStation Store. My main complaints were where is the stuff I'm looking for?
Oh god, I hated that.
And the other thing is, please be quicker. So, now let's see how
hang on, are you asking something on PlayStation Network to be fast?
So now let's see how this holds up. First things first.
Well, to be fair, that is the reason they gave, or one of the reasons they gave for delaying it in the UK and North America was that they were getting complaints about speed and stuff, so.
Yeah, yeah, compared to like 5 years.
I'm just saying what they were saying.
I mean, it already takes longer to start up than the old one. So even
that's
before
nice.
You even get into the store, it's slower. So that was already not a great sign. So my main complaint with all stores, often when you get into a section, it takes some time for the different icons to load up, and you basically can't tell what is because you don't see anything. With the new store, that has been rectified, but instead you just get a load time in front of the section which you selected. Basically, I pick what's new, then I get a short load time, and then it loads up all the icons and stuff. So it's not really a fix per se with the speed, it's just handled differently at this point, I would say. So speed-wise, it did not really improve. I also think that the way they handle the different sections, so the navigation, is not really better, because now I only have like, here is new stuff, and then PS3 games, and then go to this subsections for demos and stuff, and I don't know, it doesn't feel that much more intuitive, to be honest. And, yeah. So far, not a fan. But it's okay. Not really worse than the old store, but it's not also not a lot better. So, I'm kind of...
Do you still get that random delay when you try to, like, download something in the background and you try to back out? And it has, like, this really, like, it freezes for, like, 10 seconds.
That's a good question. I've not actually tried downloading anything because I didn't have anything to download at this point.
It drove me nuts. Like, why do I have to go through such a delay to just back out so I can do other stuff? But you can't actually do anything else while downloading anything. And I assume that's something they can't fix.
The thing that actually did bother me was that when you load up, for example, the demo page and you have like all these big icons with demos on your screen, and then you try to scroll down, it kind of hitches when it scrolls down. It's not really fluid. I mean, it's not really a big thing, but
it adds up.
It's not really something that should be texting to console. I don't really get it. It's something that also bothered me before when I looked at Android, before the new Jelly Bean stuff, when stuff just wasn't fluid and you didn't really know why. And the other thing was... No, I forgot what I wanted to say.
Well, then, while you think... Did they organize it better? That was the thing. Like, you would have like a PS3 games and then you'd have a demos and then you have a PSN demos and a PSN section... PSP section and all this other stuff instead of just kind of like having everything. Like, I could go to PS3 and I can find a game and I can find the demos for that game. Did they fix any of that?
At this point, you go to games and then you pick PS3 demos or PS3 games and then you...
So they still haven't incorporated where you can just go to PS3 and it's like, here's the games, here's the demos. I hated that, because sometimes I don't know what I'm looking for, and it's like, because it's like they would have three different options for the PS3. It's like PS3, PS3 demo, and like PSN titles are all different things.
No, they now have the demos of PSN titles and retail titles put together, I think.
Well, that's an improvement, I guess.
That's a thing. So they put that stuff together, yeah.
Fair enough.
The thing that's not in there, which I think was promised, but at least not in there yet, is being able to search through your download history.
Couldn't you do that before?
You have your download history, but you have to scroll through it.
Oh, you mean like,
They have said that they are going to let you search it, and I think also give you filter options, but it's not there yet. We will see.
Okay. We shall see, especially when us in North America get it. So I have two system dashboards to look forward to at some point in the future.
Hmm.
And I guess staying with Sony real quick, they also released the Reloaded teaser. I don't know if any of you have seen this.
No.
It's just a teaser for something that comes out, that announcing it on the 23rd. People are like, it's either the marketing campaign for PlayStation All-Stars, or it's a new, it's a basically a bunch of other stuff, but it's out there, check it out. It should be up by Tuesday, so yeah. So yeah, there's that. This is up Jason's alley, I guess. The BioShock Infinite Premium and Songbird Edition was announced this week.
The game's still coming out?
I don't know if it's still coming out. Oh, they confirmed that? Because it seems like everybody's quitting at this point. Because they lost two people this week to Microsoft, didn't they?
Yeah, I forget who. They were, it was like narrative something and...
It was like AI director and somebody else.
I don't know. But they got Rod Ferguson from Epic Games.
At this point, everybody's just shuffling the decks.
Yeah, I mean, they're in full-on polish mode, so... At this point, losing leads who are probably most vital, like, early on in the process, I don't think it's going to have a impact on the final game.
Okay. So, I mean, any thoughts on this? Because I assume you pre-ordered like 5 copies.
No, I mean, I don't know. It looks cool. I'm not someone who buys special editions typically, so.
Yeah, when I looked at it, before we started recording, all I saw was a bunch of shit I don't want around me. So, no thank you.
Okay, so there's that. Speaking of, Nightbox, the studio behind Starhawk, laid off, I think, about 20 people or 20% of their work staff.
And they're moving to iOS games now.
They're moving to
just
mobile.
Just like everybody else.
Which would be great if mobile was a healthy market. Because even Xinga's like worth this nowadays. PopCap, I think, was sold, and that was sold to Zynga, right?
EA.
PopCap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're worth this as well. I mean, what is like... I'm sure there's a market for iOS games, but I don't know.
Isn't the iOS scene like very like diluted nowadays? Like everybody, like it just seems like everybody and their mother is doing iOS games, and
well, everybody's moving there because they want to hope that they're the next big thing. The problem is that, as far as I know, there hasn't really been a big thing in quite some time.
Well, there's been. It's a lot more on a title-by-title basis versus, I mean, Zynga's whole thing was, like, banking on these, like, rehashes of Farmville and everything, and how many times are you going to be able to do that before that gets old? I mean, that just wasn't... Those weren't very deep games. Whereas, like, for example, EA's iOS division, I forget what they're called now, Fire Monkeys, they've been very successful with all of their games. And Chair Entertainment has been very successful with all their games. Ubisoft recently released Rayman Jungle Run, which we have a review of on nerdsontherocks.com, which is also, I think, a very successful game. It was only $2.99, so... The marketplace is very healthy. It's becoming a lot more crowded. But,
well, and that's what I mean. You have to stand out. And what I meant by like what out of what you're mentioning are people who are either in it or people who are bringing big brands. Because Sega just released Sonic Jump as well, and I assume that's going to do well because Sonic's a well-known brand. But like the first, I mean, as far as I know, the last major thing that was kind of new was either Temple Run or Joyride Jetpack.
Tiny Wings.
That was ages ago.
Well,
Tiny Wings was a long time ago.
Not that long ago.
Well, in terms of the marketplace, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, just look at... I mean, the example I always point out is Draw Something, which was like this huge thing in March, And by April, nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Angry Birds keeps on kind of...
I just think that, like, unsuccessful developer lays off staff, does iOS games, is a thing that is happening all too often now, and it's going to get to the point incredibly soon where it's just not going to be a viable thing, and we have to find the next thing to go and jump to, you know? Because that's what Eat, Sleep, Play did that, and, you know, Epic have had their hand in the pie, EA have got their hands in the pie, you know, everybody's doing it. And this is what I saw from Jason Rubin on his Twitter, where he said, THQ are not doing mobile games. And I think that was a good move because of it getting crowded.
Well, I don't really disagree with anything you said. I mean, it's definitely, we're seeing this a lot, but I think the reason why we're seeing it a lot is because it's so much cheaper to develop iOS games.
I think it's higher risk because there is a much bigger discoverability problem.
Well, it's a higher risk in that regard, but I think it's a lower risk in that you're not paying as much up front. Like, your company studios, like, we've seen what Kingdoms of Amalur was a recent example. You invest in $50, $60 million into a console game, and if that doesn't do well, that sinks your entire company. I think an iOS developer can kind of hold out on having
it. I suppose, but that's something that, you know, Apple have tried to address, and they obviously haven't done. I don't know anybody who, I've been reading a lot of articles from developers saying that they're just not happy at all with the new App Store, and it's a massive problem that needs to, it's not easy to fix, and I just think that it's going to be the death of a lot of these companies that are already sort of down on their knees.
Yeah, it doesn't say, though, it's like, what's the alternative, though, because they can't
do
console.
That's the biggest problem, is they don't really have an alternative, but it's going to be really hard for them to make it on iOS, because you've got people like EA that have got money to spend, and for a lot of people, it's either you get featured by Apple or that's it, you sink.
Well, I think there's definitely some truth to that. Discoverability has improved. They've, in the App Store, they've gotten really aggressive with game promotion and game, like, it's a whole games, like, market, pretty much. And they do weekly features and all sorts of collections and stuff like that. And the top of the chart, if you can break the top chart sales, like, that's a huge, huge boost. Or if you can get, you know, websites like IGN or Joystick to cover your game, that's a huge, huge boost. And you don't need as many people to buy your game on iOS as you do on the other consoles, or on consoles in general, because you have a much lower fee to get published. It's $100 to publish an iOS game versus untold thousands for, you know, Microsoft certification or Sony's or whatever. And, you know, there's a much, like, it's cheaper to develop for. It takes less time, fewer resources. I think that's what people look at. If they, it's kind of a problem. Like, if they don't get the visibility, then they're going to be in a tough spot. But they're going to be in a tough spot without visibility on any platform.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like PSN or Xbox Live Arcade or even Steam are the easiest places to discover, you know, titles that are outside the main view of the marketplace. But the difference is on iOS, a huge, huge, huge installed base. And yeah, not all of them play games, but the prices are also so low that there's a greater likelihood of someone checking you out and buying your title. You know, it's like on Steam when they have the Steam sales. Like, they make so much money because people are like, yeah, that's a few bucks, like, why not? And it's the same principle on iOS, and they have aggressive sales all the time, too. So I think that's the difference. There's less risk.
I was going to say, and I agree with Jason, and this is a huge point, is that part of the problem with iOS and mobile development in general is that we just don't, I mean, maybe it's what I pay attention to, we just don't have enough knowledge outside of like that. You don't see IGN and Joystick or Destructoid, like Kevin Wiki, you know, they don't cover every iOS game, they don't review them, they don't talk about them on podcasts. And when they do, gamers complain because, quote-unquote, those aren't real games, they shouldn't waste their time, it's just net. And I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to overcome if we want this to become a sustainable market, is the fact that it has to become a part of the dialogue, it has to become part of what people talk about and what people play. Because I think there are a ton of great games on mobile devices. they may not be substitutes for like Skyrim or GTA, but they don't need to be. They need to be fun, diversionary games that you can play on your phone, and it works in that regard.
That only costs a couple bucks.
Yeah, that only costs a couple of bucks. I mentioned this last week when I talked about playing Street Fighter X crossover Tekken on the iOS, and that doesn't work because it's not a game made for the device, so it controls terribly.
Agreed.
And what happens is, like, this is a big brand. This is a brand that gamers know. They played it, they say crap, so you get this generalization, like, iOS games are worth this. They can't even play, like, the types of games we want, so people don't try out the other stuff. Or the stuff they do try is, like, Angry Birds and, like, Cut the Rope, which are fun, simple games, but that's it. They're fun and simple. They're not what they want. They're not media experiences, and I do think there is a market for it. I think, you know, if you're a good developer, you know how to develop around it. You know how to make it a package that's appealing for everybody. Once you do that, though, the problem is getting coverage, getting people to notice you outside of just being on top of the Apple Store. You need people to talk about you on social networks, on websites, and all this other stuff because, again, as always, I think word of mouth is the greatest marketing tool in the world. So, yeah. And I guess while we're on the subject of people going mobile, we also have Niantic Softwares who have decided to switch their focus from big branded games.
There you go.
To the mobile scene. And as we were saying in our pre-show discussion, it's like, what does this say about the quality or what they expect from Call of Duty Vita if they're ditching the scene a month before the game actually ships?
Yeah, I think I've already said I don't have much hope for the Vita title they are producing right now.
Did I dream that they changed their name?
Yeah, they did change their name.
Yeah, I looked at the name and I was like, I can't even say that. I'm not even going to try. I must be dreaming.
Yeah, it's like instigate. Oh, instigate. There we go.
So they're changing the name so no one can know their shameful past.
See, that doesn't work, though, because gamers are a lot more...
We have the internet.
Yeah, it might work if it's somebody who doesn't know, but it's not like you can hide from your reputation, especially when you have to publicly announce you're changing your name. So, yeah, they're doing that, and they're switching to... And, I mean, it might be nice for them because they will be free from the shackles of actual console development and working on big brands. So maybe they have talent that just was wasted on working on these titles, but they haven't shown it yet.
Sure.
That's totally it. It's so it. And I think finally, because we are getting up there in time, Nintendo has finally announced the price drop of the Wii, and they might as well not have, because $130 isn't really a price drop.
What was it before?
Well, it's still pretty low, though.
I mean, they are adding value to it by bundling both Wii Sports and Wii Sports Results as a pack-in.
And Motion Plus.
Wiimote Plus. But I think at this point, it would have just been, they would have been better served to drop it to $100. They're probably trying to squeeze out the ass. And it's always a double-edged sword, because if they did that, especially around the holiday season, it would have been competing with the Wii U, and we would have seen something where similar to the 3DS and the DS right now, where the DS still sells fairly well compared to the 3DS, and Nintendo can't just kill that off, but it stops the 3DS from actually selling out too greatly, because you have these people who are just buying a DS because it's much cheaper and it offers a similar library, especially when Nintendo's big holiday title for the season. That was a very mangled sentence. Nintendo's biggest holiday title for the handhelds is Pokemon Black and White 2, which is a DS title.
Yeah, I mean, I think $130 is a pretty good price, because it is really low. I'm sure on Black Friday there will be deals where it's $100, and you talked about the added value with the bundles or pack-ins or whatever. And
yeah, it's
you're right. And you don't want to distract too much from the 3DS and the Wii U. So
yeah, it's also kind of
yeah. I mean, but they kind of will, and they will probably next year. The PS2 was at $130 for a long time before it went to $99. So.
Yeah, that's true, but the PS3 also had a lot more momentum at the end of this generation than the Wii does. and it also hurt the PS3 for the first couple of years. Granted, that was also vastly different because there's like a $500 price difference between the two, but it didn't help Sony. I was also going to say it's kind of sad. I would assume I'm the biggest Wii fan on this podcast. I didn't even know what was the current bundle for the Wii at this point. I didn't know it still came with Mario. So that was surprising to hear they were getting rid of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm sure they've crunched the numbers, but, I mean, how many more sales are you really going to get at $99 versus $129?
I assume a lot more. Again, it's, you know, like, at that point, it becomes something like, oh, we can buy a second one for the kids. It does Netflix. It does Hulu. You know, they can get, you know, we can get them Just Dance. We can get them the Mario titles and stuff like that. I think it's
but
more...
But you can still pick those up next year without... damaging your...
But I think a lot of people, a lot of focus on the industry is usually centered around this time of the year because people are buying stuff in bulk at this time of the year. But yeah, like
I think
said,
it's still a more aggressive price strategy than either Microsoft or Sony are going with this.
Well, Microsoft kind of dropped the price. It's not officially a $50 price drop. I think it's just for the holiday season.
Yeah, with pack-ins, which... And it's... I don't think it's on the lower end SKU. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think it's $250.
Yeah,
I think
$250.
I think it's a bad package.
I think this bears repeating. 7 years after the Xbox 360 came out, it is still a $250 console.
Well, to be fair, at least they didn't raise the price like another company did.
No, then that's absolutely. I don't understand this by either of them. Like, I think they like $199 is. They need to be more aggressive than that at this stage. Like, what are they saving it for? We all know they're coming out with new systems next year. Like, what are they like? They need to make this push now.
Yeah, but at the moment they're selling it to people that don't know that.
Are they really selling it to though? Like,
people who buy the Kinect.
Yeah,
they are selling it to people who buy the Kinect at this point. I think Kinect has kind of run its course. It hasn't really been... I mean, like the way I usually see it is I look at the software sales for this device and there's nothing that's moving on Kinect anymore. So I assume people have it in their rooms and stuff and just aren't buying stuff.
And that's the thing. I think they're going to make most of their money this holiday on software. So the best way to sell more software is to have cheaper hardware. So I don't know. That's just what I think.
I think Microsoft is just thinking, and I assume Sony's thinking something similar, but Microsoft's case is just like, nobody's catching up to us right now. We're pushing ahead. Everybody's kind of on our team. We don't really need to do anything because we have Halo 4, we have Call of Duty. People are going to buy the system. Sony's just thinking, Microsoft's not dropping the price. Nintendo's coming out at $350. We can kind of push this another holiday season because we can take any money that we can get. So, yeah. Like you said, it's a decent price, and they do have to fight with, you know, like they are introducing a new system that's much more expensive than any system they've released to date. But I think they could have gone cheaper, but we shall see if it works out for them in the end.
Yeah.
I think that's it for us this week. Martin just stepped out. We'll just. Really quick, you talk about what we're doing next week as far as what we're doing and what we want you folks to do. And we'll post this on Twitter and Facebook and all that fun jazz as well. Next week, as many of you would suspect, being that it's October 29th, I believe, when this comes out, we will be doing, we will focus part of the episode on Halloween content. You know, talking about your favorite scary games, your favorite... It doesn't necessarily need to be a horror game or survival horror. It could be like a stage or a segment of a game that you find frightening and stuff like that. So we'll be discussing that, what makes horror and fear work in video games, the best, some of the better examples, some of the worst examples, and stuff like that. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us... Well, again, we'll post this on Twitter, but you can check us out at, like, you know, send me stuff, because that seems to be where most of this stuff goes anyhow. You can send it to the Dual Wielding account. You can send it to our email, which is dw@nerdsontherocks.com. You know, just think of horror... You know, anything horror or Halloween-related, scary levels, themed levels. It has to be really specific themed levels, but, you know, like Ghost House and Mario counts. I would assume most cemetery levels in games.
So definitely not Resident Evil 6.
Definitely not Resident Evil 6. Or Resident Evil 5, for that matter. The Resident Evil series, the Silent Hill franchise, a Fatal Frame franchise, Cursed Mountain, Condemned.
Someone's got to bring up Amnesia.
Amnesia.
Well,
I've
sat through the entire game of Amnesia, so I made my housemate play it.
Yeah, are you one of those people? Can you not play it on your own?
It's not that I didn't know. It's because anything scares him, so we made him play it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Okay, because I used to have friends like that who would, and we could probably, let's wrap and then we'll talk about this off air real quick. Again, send us all this other stuff. As always, you can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Forum Spring, and all that fun jazz. For Martin, who stepped out, and wishing him a happy birthday again, Daniel, Jason, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 86.